I'm going to let my dad ask the last question, because if I don't, I feel there'll be some negative repercussions.
The only thing I want to say as a consumer slash person who watch TV late at night, I hate commercials on TV. There's a minute in the bottom says skip, I press it so hard, I hope it's never going to come back.
I want to make sure I just rewind what my dad just said. My dad said, when I watch television at night from 11 to 12, I hate commercials. The next thing he said is, when it goes to the commercial, as soon as in the bottom right, it hits skip, I hit the button and skip it. My dad is watching YouTube for the last couple of years, and he just referred to YouTube, not television. This is what I think people don't understand is actually happening. This isn't about 14 and 15 and 22-year-olds. The world is transitioning into consumption. The future of television is here. Everyone's like, Gary, it's coming. You're right, it's coming. It's not coming. Like, it's happening.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. We're excited. We're going to kind of do a little bit of a half panel, half podcast session here. So we're going to do the panel. I think it's going to be really fun. So ready to rock and roll. Mima, you want to introduce it?
First of all, thank you so much for joining us on this beautiful day in Cannes. Sorry, we had a little weather snafu. But excited to have you all here today. I think, you know, in a week where you've probably heard so much about what could happen tomorrow, AI, and what's going to happen with all of that, I'm really excited to welcome you here today to talk about what's actually happening today and what's actually important. And that's what's happening on social every single minute of every single day. And what could be more important than the creators who are making that happen. So with that, I'm excited to introduce you to the OG creator, the fabulous Mr. Gary Vaynerchuk, who is going to be moderating our panel today.
Thank you. Actually, just real quick, I appreciate that. Let's also clap it up for each other, because there's a lot of people here moving and doing their thing, and I just want to make sure everyone... That's you guys, that's right. Can we clap it for each other a little bit louder? I'm talking about you. Yeah, you for yourself. All right. I'm incredibly excited to be here. Let's kick it off. Vayner Nation, I know you're listening on the podcast. We're live here at Cannes Lions at the end of the week. There's been a lot going on here. The majority of it, straight bullshit. People talking to each other about this ecosystem of advertising that normal people like you listening to this podcast never see. However, this session is actually going to be the realest version of it, because we're going to be talking about what's actually happening, not TV commercials that nobody actually sees, not all this other nonsense that's happening subjectively in boardrooms. This is happening in the trenches. There are human beings out there who are producing content that are actually being consumed. While everybody in this town is trying to find that magical television commercial that's gonna sell stuff, a man gets on a skateboard, listens to Fleetwood Mac, drinks Ocean Spray out of the bottle, and Ocean Spray sells out across the world. So this is called real life, and I'm excited about it. And we have a real life audience, so let's hear them clap it up for everybody at home. What makes this extra special for me for everybody at home is, many of you know that I've now been in the ad world for 14 years with VaynerMedia, and I've come across a very small handful of people who actually think do know what's happening in pop culture, do care of bringing that currency and that energy to the largest companies in the world. And the gentleman I'm going to introduce first is a name that I've been talking about for a long time. I was talking to my brother AJ about how long we've liked Frank Cooper. We met him early on in PepsiCo days, and we left and we said, wait a minute, that guy might actually know what's actually going on. And so here we are all these years later. He is now the global CMO of Visa. Frank, how are you?
Doing great, Gary.
Let's clap it up for Frankie.
Thank you, Gary. Cool, fantastic.
We're also joined, and I'll let him jump in a minute. We're also joined by some great creators who I'm going to allow to introduce themselves and tell you a little about them. So before I let Frank kind of get on the ones and twos, we're going to go around and make sure the audience at home and the individuals here know a little bit about the other incredible individuals we have with us. So let's start it off. This one especially excites me because it mixes the two worlds. Can you say hello, tell everybody at home and hear who you are and what you do?
Yeah, hi everyone. My name is Robin Del Monte, also known as Girl Boss Town. My content, woo. Thank you. Thank you. I haven't even spoke yet and I'm getting applause. So this is really great. So my content focuses on social strategy, creative direction, and trend forecasting. And I essentially created a digital resume and called out brands and celebrities that I wanted to start working with because my traditional resume couldn't even get my foot in the door. I was on LinkedIn every day sending 50 resumes thinking that it was just going to happen for me. But then I made it happen for myself. Instead of being invited into these boardrooms, I was creating these boardrooms online with the consumer and allowing the consumer to be a part of the creative, which always inspires me. So currently I work with brands and allow them to and show them that creating a relationship with the creator and creatives offline is just as important as the relationships that you build on camera. And I know a lot of brands, maybe some that are here today, are starting to do that, which makes me very happy about where the industry is going. And I'm so grateful to be a part of that. And just to say, a year and a half ago, I was rolling silverware as a waitress, and now I'm on a yacht in the south of France speaking with you guys. So the power of storytelling and social media is real.
Go figure. Let's keep this going. Please say hello.
Hi, everyone. My name is Adrienne Lahens. I lead global operations at TikTok Creator Marketing Solutions. So I'm not a creator myself, but I
You're empowering.
Yes, I do represent all of the creators on TikTok. Thank you. We have some we have some amazing creators in the audience right here from TikTok
Let's go.
We have at TikTok, we're really investing heavily in empowering creators and providing opportunities for creators to make a living on TikTok. That is our whole sole purpose. That is how my team is measured, is how much money are creators making on the platform. And so we have products like the TikTok Creator Marketplace, which is our official platform for brand and creator collaborations. And we spend a lot of time really educating marketers on how to really partner with creators in an effective way, right? And how to really leverage the power of creators, because as you see with our creators here on this panel, they are just so multifaceted and they are, you know, true entrepreneurs, but they are also creative consultants and they can offer so much value to your brands and how to connect with consumers today.
I love it. My man.
How's it going, guys? I'm Eric. I'm also excited to be in the south of France.
Let's go.
I'm a YouTuber. I've wanted to be a YouTuber since I was like in fifth grade. I feel like I'm the first member of like Gen Z who's starting to grow up watching YouTube and then actually got to do it for a job, which is really exciting. I was a wedding videographer up until 2020 when weddings stopped happening for unknown reasons. and at that point, I sort of had a come to Jesus moment of what I really wanted to do. And I really just put my foot on the gas for YouTube. I set this audacious goal of going from 0 to 1 million subscribers to prove that it was still possible to become a creator in 2020. I was luckily able to achieve that goal, which was awesome. And now we've sort of become, over the last couple of years, news outlets, Colin and Samir call us the MTV of YouTube, where I have sort of different formats that we've adopted from mainstream media and brought them over to digital. It's a whole lot of fun, and we've grown to 13 million subscribers now. And we have, it's very exciting. And I get to use CreatorNow, which is my creator educational platform, to help creators do the exact same thing as I did. So that's where we're at.
Frank, I think it's really fun to kick this off right away with you. You know, with Visa, you know, you said something downstairs, and I heard you say it maybe to me or somewhere else before. Our relationship with finance is growing in a very different way. And youth culture, and even just general pop culture, is trying to have a different, and is having a different relationship with their finance. When you think about Visa as an iconic brand and what it does as an infrastructure, and then what is happening in the creator economy, knowing your background in music and getting your roots in that and doing it for, you know, PepsiCo and things of that nature, it feels like a really, I think a lot of people listening may not be able to see the connection point, where for me it's incredibly clear. I'm curious from your perspective, what is the opportunity? How do you see it? How does Visa see it? How does Frank Cooper see it? What's, you know, those things? Take it away.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, like you, I'm not a creator. I have no handle. Like, what's your handle again?
Arak.
Yeah. And your handle?
Girl Boss.
Yeah. Girl Boss. I need a handle. Yeah. I don't have a handle, but I love the handles. But what I have been is supportive of creative people for a long time. And you know, I came out of the more traditional.
Before any of them were born.
Yeah, probably so.
It's true.
Yeah, it's probably
You've
so.
Been
it's
in
probably
it.
True. I've been in the game a long time. And I started off at in the music industry. I was at Def Jam. And so I got a chance to look at, as you know, I looked at it through the lens of culture and music. I was at BuzzFeed, you know, during the good years, 2015, 2017. We were actually there together at BuzzFeed. And a couple things I learned through that process is number one, that many brands did not look at the world through a cultural lens. You know, they looked at it through an industry lens. They looked at and they talked about what they wanted to communicate to people. And they would even sometimes overlay some psychographics, which is helpful. But I was interested in culture. Like, what are the shared values and shared behaviors? You know, what's your worldview and how are people grouping together beyond traditional demographics? And so that's what I kind of applied. Secondly, because I came out of both Motown and Def Jam, I believe and still believe to this day that the creativity that came out of Black culture in particular defied everything, including today. Like, there's a lot of talk about AI. And what I love about this creativity in Black culture is that it defied every historical pattern you can name. Just look at it over time. Everything that was done actually was a contradiction to the historical pattern. And so I looked at that and said, well, there's such energy coming from that. How can I apply it to brands and bring humanity back into brands? So that's what I've been trying to do over and over. I did it at Pepsi, you know. And at Visa, what I saw was this, is that there was this shift in people's relationship with money. You know, for a long time, people would think about their sense of well-being. They'd think about, you know, nutrition and kind of exercise and even mindfulness. But money sat over here outside of it. And when you looked at all the stats, though, number one source of anxiety was money. You know, and people were trying to figure out, like, how do I move ahead? And what I saw from creators in particular was that there was this level of transparency about mistakes, about, you know, vulnerability being how do I make money and how do I move ahead? And for me, I saw that as an opportunity. And that, to me, is just a cultural lens on money. And Visa, well, many people think of it as a payment card system, but it's just, I think of it as part of the entire money ecosystem, you know, how you earn, spend, borrow, invest, and give money. And we play across that full spectrum. And so I think we have a role in bringing some of that kind of cultural nuance into the game.
I love it. For the three of you that interact with brands from different perspectives, two from the creator side, one from the platform side, just around the horn for a minute or two, what do you think stands out as the thing currently that brands don't get? You know, on the TikTok platform level, with the biggest brands in the world, what are they still missing right now? What do you think is the white space? And then for the creators, like, what's the most tone-deaf stuff that you're seeing? What are you struggling with? What do you laugh at when a brand comes to you with some bullshit?
Yeah, so there's been a major shift in the media landscape, right? It's all about, people don't want to be marketed to from brands. They want to be marketed to from real people. They don't want to be sold to, right? And so creators play a really amazing part in that. But oftentimes they hear brands, well, I want to connect with my audience. I want to connect with my consumer. But when you're working with a creator, it's not your audience. It's not your consumer. It's the creator's community that they have cultivated. So when you approach it from the lens of, I'm reaching my audience, you're going to have a more nuanced kind of approach of trying to control the script or having like very specific talking points. Whereas if you recognize that you're actually reaching the creator's community and the creator's audience, you're going to recognize and have much more respect for that creator to have their own voice and use their own tone and be truly authentic to themselves. And authenticity wins on TikTok every single day. 71% of TikTok viewers say that a creator's authenticity is what motivates them to purchase from a brand. So we spend a lot of time educating brands to kind of give up some control in the creative process. And also, you know, it's not just, you know, there's plenty of Gen Z trendsetters on the TikTok platform, but there's also grandparents, there's also accountants, and, you know, dentists, and all sorts of
even
creators.
Dentists
on TikTok.
Oh, I'm aware. One of the first people that popped was a dentist, if you take it back when the transition of Musical.ly to TikTok. And I think that's always one of the biggest mistakes that people make. People continue to talk about social media as if it's just for kids when the entire world is consuming social media. What do you got?
Yeah, I think a lot of times when you see a brand and a creator work together, I always think about it as two people trying to protect a brand. It's the brand trying to protect the brand. It's the creator trying to protect their brand. And no one wants to give too much. And I think the most beautiful things happen. There's like a magic that happens when right in the middle of that Venn diagram, you know, where the brand naturally has an integration into the creator's world. There's like a little sandbox there. And the best brand integrations that I've ever done is not where a brand gives me bullet points to hit. And by better, I mean fruitful for both myself and for the brand, right? They have a fun sandbox to play in of like, here's sort of the constraints. This naturally works inside of your brand and ours. How can we make this feel natural integrated? Like you said, 73% of people are looking for a natural integration into a brand. The best one that we ever did, I think, was for Pizza Hut, where I love pizza. It's my favorite food. It's my first memory in life. Pizza Hut specifically, I've always loved. And I actively called them out in my videos asking for them to help me make the world's largest pizza. And at the end of last year, we ended up making the world's largest pizza with Pizza Hut. I made a Super Bowl commercial about it and everything. Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate it. But it came from me begging them to do a partnership with me. So I think it has to be a natural fit, and you have to give the creator somewhat of a sandbox to work in.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what both of you guys are saying. And I grew up on digital. I mean, I always say the TV was my babysitter growing up. So I was always consumed with media. And if you think about it, a lot of the times, Gen Z, they spend more time with these creators than they do with their actual friends in real life. It is such a personal relationship. So for brands to tap that and understand that, like we were saying, I mean, we're so far past the 2016 through 2018 influencer era where there was less transparency and they gave everybody the same script. We've caught on to that now. I always say it's like when you're walking past that kiosk in the mall and somebody's shoving a product down your throat, you're not going to want to buy it. But when your cousin's acne cured up after having acne for 2 years and she's telling you about it, you're going to be drawn to it. So definitely, like we said, even though authenticity is a buzzword, having these authentic brand partnerships, but sometimes that doesn't come right away and that doesn't come from just a traditional brand deal. Like for me, sometimes that looks like me doing consulting for them and really growing our relationship so they can understand me, my audience, and what would be the best approach for us to work together.
Frank, what is a new organization, you've gone into some of the biggest brands in the world. What does a new organization usually struggle with, or how does it normally act when you're trying to bring in actual pop culture, actual creative that is actually happening in the world versus what's happening in Madison Avenue? The way I started this podcast is there's a disconnect, in my opinion, yeah, one man's point of view, between how Madison Avenue, I love when everyone here is like, how we as brands, you know, create culture, and they define that as the commercial that creates culture. And I'm like, that hasn't happened in a very long time. You know, we're not rolling out the Where's the Beefs or the Just Do It's. Spike Lee and Michael Jordan aren't showing up on the scene in a television commercial for 30 seconds. The culture, pop culture, urban culture, the culture's happening in a lot of different ways. You're actually trying to bring that real thing. I know how challenging that is because we're trying to do the same thing as an agency, but you're on the inside at the highest level trying to bring that in. What are the common themes you've seen? And more importantly, what should people be thinking about on the other side of this if they're trying to bring that energy to a big or a mid-sized company? Small companies can do it a little easier. There's less politics. It's more gut feel. But for the companies that you're playing at, the biggest ones in the world, how should they be thinking about it, and what is the common theme?
Yeah, well, it's a tough question. I mean, the common theme is
coming
that,
at it hard.
Yeah, exactly. No, look, the common theme is that every company, no matter how big or how small it is, has a kind of muscle memory. And so, and the ones that have been the most successful for the longest in doing it in a certain way are the least likely to change and adapt. And so what I've tried to do, particularly for those companies that have been successful and have that muscle memory, I try to come in with two things. One, a point of view that proves that interruptive advertising simply doesn't work. And it's intuitive to people.
Real quick, because I'm going to use the sound of the crowd for the listeners at home. If you are a human being here right now that doesn't like when pop-up ads take over your screen or when a commercial comes on when you're watching your actual content, please make some noise. But to your point...
Well, I got an ad for you, Noble.
But to your point, the majority money spent out there right now, They want to stop you and make you watch some crap.
Well, it's like in the Matrix, like everyone took the blue pill. Like everyone knows it doesn't really work. Mm-hmm. But you have a system set up to that you can sell it into your organization.
$80 billion.
Yeah.
$80 billion spent on television commercials.
Right.
In the US.
But the easiest thing to do is to say, now I have some stats that come in and show that it's somehow connected to some kind of brand lift, and then I'll show, you know, the number of people who saw it, and people just kind of buy into it. But that's starting to crack now, because now most people in the C-suite are asking, show me an outcome. Show me an outcome that actually matters. Like, you know, strip away all the brand jargon. What's the profitable consumer behavior that you're trying to change, and show me that you shifted it? That's changing the entire conversation. And so that's number one. Number two, I think what's helpful now is that we have data that actually really proves what can move the needle. And that's happening in social and digital more than anywhere else. I can actually show if we're moving a certain cohort through a certain action. Before, it's a little bit of a guesswork. There are leaps you have to take, right? And it's work gut. Now I can actually show it. So that's the second thing. The third thing is probably the least intuitive of all. To me, your best friend has to become the CFO. The least creative person in the company has to become your best friend. And the only way that CFO becomes your best friend is if you can translate all this creative conversation, translate that into some kind of growth or business outcome that the CFO can understand.
Yeah. Knowing that so many CMOs listen to my podcast, say this one more time. Do you believe that there has been over the last half decade, a disconnect for many Fortune 500 CMOs from realizing the importance of their relationship with the CFO, because the tenure of CMOs continues to decline. Yeah. And I'm such a buyer of what you're saying. Have you, like, is up close and personal, is this like a real serious observation? Do you think CMOs, because they're creative, are struggling to connect that, and that's your recommendation to them?
Yeah, I'm not even sure how many CMOs are creative, but I do think that there are many CMOs are trapped into the language of marketing.
Yes,
you know, and they use
their students.
Yeah, it's students of marketing, and then they use all the language, and then so, you know, what I know does not work, and I've seen it many, many times, is if you go in and you talk the language of, I'm going to show you brand lift and brand preference to a CFO, it won't mean anything.
Zero.
And
they will say, get the fuck out of my office.
Exactly right.
I'm serious.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And so then you have a choice. Then you can say, like, either you can say, they just don't get it, right? And you'll lose that battle.
Every time.
Or you have to develop a translation layer and say, now I'm going to take, if you believe, okay, brand preference really matters, but what does that really mean? Like, what does that really mean? Or if I hire a creator and I say, hey, I'm gonna hire a bunch of creators. I got a creator network now, I'm gonna put them all on, and they're gonna be the voice of the brand. That will mean
one of the voices of the brand.
And so I have this network, and the CFO will look at me like, I have no idea why you're doing that and how that's going to help. Now, if I show that the creators have a certain amount of influence, and I can show who they're reaching, and show what outcome I'm going to get from that.
And for example, in this scenario, at the end of the year, if there is direct results where younger people are going into your ecosystem, when that's who you targeted through those creators, all of a sudden, now you're starting to connect those dots.
That's the end game.
That's right.
Yeah.
One more time, just back to you. Knowing that you've been around what was considered fame coming up in the music industry, and that was a lot of the element of what you brought into a PepsiCo environment, What is the connective tissue between the fame that you grew up with and saw and these creators that you're starting to see that are building it? They're obviously, it's a very different platform. Distribution's different. Yeah. Is there any common thread that you're seeing from this generation of creators versus like the Michael Jacksons and the, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'll tell you, even back then, people paid attention to the finish line. And they would see someone all of a sudden at superstardom level. But what they missed is all the small steps that they took along the way. And to me, there's power in small steps. And I see, you, it's just more visible today. You can see the small steps. And you can see a year later, from rolling silverware to kind of being in the south of France, or Lil Nas X, you know, when he did the pizza video and said, next year I'm going to blow up. I'm going to have this. 1 year later, he blew up. Speed of culture is faster, but the process is actually the same, which is like the small steps that and the joy you get from that progress is the thing that gives you greater confidence to move up.
For everybody listening at home, the craziness for me on a personal level of Frank just saying that story about the small steps is his much smarter, much more attractive, much more awesome wife is sitting across from him right now.
True.
Nina. Who in my the corner of my right eye, I can see my father, Sasha, obviously, who owned the store that I actually, who's actually grew up in. What my dad does not know, that I know as we sit here, is that Nina was a customer of Wine Library when I was a teenager and has watched all my small steps from carrying out cases that were rung up at the register to the back of her car all the way to where we sit here today. So she saw, she tipped me. She was a great tipper, Dad. And I think it's really important. To your point, the speed in which some of these youngsters are able to get to that place, it's real. But they still had their life events. They were still 6 and 9 and 15 laying in a room dreaming and doing the work, watching the videos from the Casey Neistats or the Mr. Beasts or, you know, the things D-Rock made for me, like watching and building and dreaming and strategizing and putting in the work. Yes, the world is so much faster now and you can get to a higher level because somebody doesn't have to pick you at Def Jam or MTV or CBS. The world is open. Yeah. Algorithms and platforms like TikTok and YouTube can create the merit of it versus the luck of the draw of somebody thinking you might and you get to the world. So the world has changed. Yeah. But I, you know, it's really powerful what you just said. The work still matters.
Yes.
To the point of the energy of this step, almost every 15-year-old on earth wants to be an influencer. Almost all of them right now. And the reality is not everybody will get there. The reality is many more will get there than we did in the 80s and 90s because of distribution. That merit of attention, the interest, is going to lead to an entirely different world, and that is pretty profound. Anybody from panel want to jump in on a build on anything they've heard the last couple of minutes?
I was just going to jump in on what you guys just said. I do think something really special about the way content and entertainment works these days is it's what you guys just said, which is that it's the audience is autonomous. They get to decide what they watch at every single second, right? Which is really, really special. It's super different, and that's, I think, a really important way to look at how content is, number one, created, and number two, how brands are partnering. It cannot be, we were just talking about this before, but you know, when we do an ad or a product placement for a company, it's not 60 seconds straight of talking about that company. It has to be engaging. It has to be interesting for the audience at home, you know?
Yeah, and I would just add just back to the point on the CFO relationship with the CMO, we're hearing a lot of times, you know, creators actually coming up in, you know, boardrooms and it like we had like for Invisalign, when they partnered with Charli D'Amelio, their sales went through the roof and that was very evident during that time. So that's another way that, you know, creators can really integrate into the strategy and add a lot of value in terms of driving that ROI.
Yeah, and kind of going off of what you said as well, I think I grew up as, like, I read tabloids instead of Hooked on Phonics. Like, I was, like, a massive, massive celebrity, like, geeked out, like, wanted to move to L.A. because of Newlyweds in the Hills. I moved to L.A. I didn't have a Viacom camera crew. It did not work out for me like that. But I watched how I felt about celebrities, and I love how that is shifting, like, with what you were saying, because instead of people following somebody just because of their status, they're following them for their story, which is massive. And I love that I'm a part of that.
Frank, back to finances. I'm fascinated by that. I was listening to how you got in there. What are you sensing? Like, what are some things that you think people might not be paying attention to in youth culture or even the establishment? Like, that dig a little bit deeper into finance as like a health mechanism or like the way I thought that was really, really powerful. Like, is that observation very clear? Is that bubbling? And then, you know, how are people thinking about friction too, right? I mean, I don't think people really understand what the credit card did to the world. Completely changed the world and create, you know, people used to have the cash on hand, you know, like then credit card changed the way you would think about transacting. In general, I mean, I'm pretty pumped right now that I can like tap my phone. like this elimination of friction in parallel with our relationship with money and then more importantly, knowing the enormity of creators that are listening right now that would love to do stuff with Visa and things of that nature. What are some of the things the creators should be thinking about in paying attention to the biggest brands or the biggest CMOs in the world and reverse engineering it like some of our amazing staff is down here.
Well, look, I mean, the way I think about the spectrum of financial well-being, it's how you earn your money, how you spend it, how you borrow it, how you invest it, and then how you give it. It's the full spectrum. Now, Visa.
What about how you save it?
Huh?
Has that been completely eliminated? Like, I'm listening carefully, and I think it's a really interesting. It almost seems like there is no words about that in culture, and I'm fascinated by that because the most amount of happiness that I see amongst many sectors are ones that know how to balance that saving part in addition to the investing part and things of that nature.
Yeah, I lump it. And maybe I should split it out, but I lump it under invest because you get, I mean, even though you get like a very small percentage.
Better now, money got more expensive.
Yeah.
Interest rates, you know?
That's the positive side of it. But it's a great point. And Visa, but Visa's been known for the spend side of it. But I will say this, we take the credit card for granted, but if you go way, way, way back, before 1958, when they had this universal credit card, you had individual credit cards for department stores and gas stations, that was it. And if you wanted a personal loan, you had to go into the basement of the bank, sit across the table from someone who would then evaluate you and decide whether they were going to give you a loan. And for many people, for a variety of reasons, that was never going to happen.
Last name, gender, race, and many other things.
100% right. And so what it did, this universal credit card basically gave you an interest-free loan for 30 days, interest-free, without going into a bank. That expanded. That
changed the world.
It changed the world, actually. Had other problems, though. It created other issues, right? But it changed the world in that respect. So that's happening. There are easier ways. There's less friction happening around that. But to me, the more interesting side of it right now is how people earn their money. And there's so many ways now to earn money. But I think one of our goals, what I would love to do for me, it's personally I want to do, is to demystify how you can earn money in different ways. And so we did an episodic series with TikTok called Get Paid. It's kind of one step toward that. Like, so how do creators get paid? What do you have to do in order to set yourself up and build and take steps forward so that you have a greater chance of getting paid and making a living out of being a creator? I want to shed light more on what are the different levels of being a creator. Like, being an artist and a creator is not quite the same thing. You can be a creator, but not an artist. But if you're an artist, you are a creator. But your outcome is going to be different. How do you measure that? And so I just want to shed light on that, demystify it, so that people understand with greater clarity how you might earn money rather than just spend it. And so that's my own personal goal.
I love that. I want to open it up to the audience to do a couple questions. How much time do we have left, do you think, kind of? 5, 10? Cool, let's sneak a couple in. Raise your hand and ask. We'll get one of the mics out here to ask a question.
So in the beginning, you were speaking about kind of traditional media, television ads. Do you think any time in the near future, brands will kind of just let go of traditional media and just go completely onto creator advertising, influencing?
No. I think television, there's still a role for television ads. And so, if you want broad awareness, television ads can work. And if you look at live sports in particular, it's one of the few places where you're going to have simultaneous viewing. Right, and so it becomes an important platform. You know, we are a big sponsor of FIFA, for example. FIFA, this last World Cup, probably had 5 billion viewers total.
Frank, in FIFA, I apologize for interrupting because it's interesting to me. It's funny you went there, which I think is one of the great, I think Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
And soccer/proper football is so unique because there isn't a lot of commercial breaks because of the way the game is played.
Exactly right.
So the brand is more integrated.
100% right.
Right? Yeah. Unlike the Olympics, unlike even the Super Bowl, though the Super Bowl is special because we actually all want to watch the ads, which is different than the AFC and NFC championship game. It's interesting that you went to FIFA, which I think is really strategic because soccer is very conducive for more brand integration, more like brand integrating into a YouTube video, different than what you said earlier, 100%. Disruptive. Is there that nuance of conversation going on?
Yeah. Number one, I think I see FIFA and soccer as being deeply cultural. All you have to do is show up to the games and you'll see that it's not just a sporting event. It's a deeply cultural event.
Or just look at Ronaldo and Messi's following on Instagram versus every other famous sports athlete you know. For anyone at home listening on the podcast right now, please go look at Ronaldo and Messi's following count and then go look at LeBron, Tom Brady, and add them all up together, 100%. Proper football, Americans specifically, because are often, and it's changed in the last 5 to 10 years, but are often naive to the size and scale of that game.
100%. But the World Cup, for me in particular, is important because you have about 20 Super Bowls happening in the span of a couple of months. You know, so each one of those games, you're going to have several hundred million, you know, viewers watching each one of those games. And so the question I have more is what kind of commercials work? I think that, yes, there are television spots that can work. Yes, it's interruptive. But if you can make it more contextual, you're in the midst of a NFL game or a basketball game or a soccer game, how can you make it add value to people's experience as opposed to taxing their experience? So I think there's still a role for TV ads, but I think that we should reduce it dramatically. And we should be in social and digital in a much more significant way.
Questions?
First of all, Gary, thank you very much, because I thought that I was going crazy thinking of those guys as dinosaurs. But obviously, it is like that, as you said. But my question is, obviously, I don't know whether if we can save dinosaurs, but my question is...
That's a lot nicer than things a lot of other people think. Dinosaurs are fine. Go ahead.
No. My question is, what creators can do to come closer to the big brands? Like AirRack is one with 13 million, which is amazing.
Real number.
But is it a solution to have some kind of a network or a community or a group and then offer it with 130 million people and then offer it to the big brands and so on so we can outlive
the
dinosaurs?
That was too spot on the nose. I'm going to let TikTok answer that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're building, all of the tools that we're building are really enabling two-way discovery. So not only can brands find creators and reach out to creators directly and, like, you know, really filter down, but we also have tools that allow creators to self-apply for brand opportunities as well and really raise their hand and be a part of the campaigns they want to be a part of. We really see, like, the landscape shifting in that direction where it's much more of that two-way dialogue between brands and creators than it is just, like, a one-way reaching out and having the, you know, brand reach out directly.
And also, real quick, just to hop in on that, my career is simply because I just started calling out the brands. And when I started doing this, I didn't have a massive amount of followers. And my voice was still heard. Because if you call out brands in a way that makes sense and they see the potential in you, then that's one way, obviously, to get the brand to recognize you, but also to get the audience and the consumer already invested in your relationship with the brand.
Yeah, I think the other thing that people forget in this town and just the whole thing is, like, when the television commercial came out, all the radio guys shit on it. People hate change, especially if they're making money in the way it is now. That one hit for everyone, right? Right? Even the biggest celebrities in the world, when they're in the streets and in the culture, they love it. But then when they become a superstar and they live in a penthouse and they lost that touch, they don't like it when somebody else comes up and has it. People hate change, especially when it affects their pocket. And so what you have here is an advertising industry that is literally still based on the stuff you watched if you watched Mad Men and Don Draper and his fine ass, right? And it's still trading that way, and people are holding on for dear life. Here's the problem. Technology doesn't care about your feelings. It's just gonna continue to shift. When cable came along, the TV guys who only had 13 channels, they didn't like that they had to share those commercials with the other cable channels. And then the internet came, and they didn't like that they had to change. And then the internet websites, they didn't like that they had to share with social, and then creators. And guess what? Wait till the creators find out that there are going to be virtual creators built in AI who are gonna be 10 times more popular than them, because they can be built that way, and it's already happening in Japan with virtual YouTubers. And so right now, creators are walking around here like, these fucking dinosaurs, I'm about to take that paper, they don't know shit. And they're gonna wake up in 2, 3, 4 years and they're gonna see a creator that isn't a human being that's gonna take their paper, unless they know how to adapt. Because it's a jungle out here. It's a jungle out here. You want? Two things. I'm gonna let my dad ask the last question, because if I don't, I feel there'll be some negative repercussions. And two, there's a lot of creators here. I don't know what Frank's schedule is, but I highly recommend as soon as we break here for all of you to come up and say hello, because that's a good idea for you. Dad, I don't think that mic works. Here you go.
Nothing. I promise nothing controversial is going to be asked. The only thing I want to say as a consumer slash person who watches TV late at night, 10, 11, 12 o'clock, and it didn't click to me till I'm listening to all of you, I hate commercials on TV. I swear to God, I'm laying, and my wife is a witness, and I don't let her have the remote control because she's not quick enough. The minute it shows on the bottom skip, I press it so hard, I hope it's never going to come back.
This is even more interesting, at least from one man's point. Thank you, Dad, for that statement. I want to make sure I just rewind what my dad just said. My dad said, when I watch television at night from 11 to 12, I hate commercials. The next thing he said is, when it goes to the commercial, as soon as in the bottom right it hits skip, I hit the button and skip it. My dad is watching YouTube for the last couple of years, and he just referred to YouTube, not television. My 69-year-old dad, soon to be 70, on September 10th of this year. This goes back to your question. Because this goes back to what I said earlier of everybody saying social is so young and this, that, the other thing. And like, yeah, for the kids it's good, Gary, but I'm trying to sell the 69-year-old men. My father just referenced watching television at night in the concept of television. But what I know, because he's my dad and I know, is 2 years ago, he started getting comfortable with watching YouTube instead of cable or network television. And in his mind, he's associating television, but he said, when it gets to the commercial, I click skip. This is what I think people don't understand is actually happening. This isn't about 14 and 15 and 22-year-olds. The world is transitioning into consumption. The future of television is here. Everyone's like, Gary, it's coming. You're right, it's coming. It's not coming. People watch YouTube and Hulu and Netflix and connected TV and on and on and on. I don't know what people are thinking. And to Frank's point, live sports for sure. But what happens when ESPN becomes its own OTT? Like, it's happening. It's happening. Frank, parting words, we'll wrap up. Anything you got, anything?
Nothing. Look, thank you guys. I've learned so much from you guys, actually, and continue to learn. My whole thing, as you guys know, I've transitioned through many industries, has been being curious and kind of hearing you guys and your perspectives on how you think about creating and building connection with people. I learned from that. So I thank you. I thank you guys for allowing me to participate with you.
Thank you.
Let's clap it up for everybody here. Have a great can, everybody. Bye-bye.